This is a previously recorded episode.
Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Mike Brennan, and you're on M Squared TechCast.
And we're back for what is officially our eighth show here. We now have seven of these in the can, available at podcastandgreat.com, SoundCloud, and iTunes. Check out our previous podcasts. This is a show where we talk about technology in Michigan from a Michigan-centric perspective. And Mike and I have both been covering technology in Michigan for nigh on to, well,
20 years.
I was going to say, how old's the internet? About that long.
So, 20 yeah. years.
Something like that. And we're breaking format a little bit today because we've got a guest who had a hard stop at 3:15 this afternoon, and we really wanted to get him on the show because what he does is just so interesting. It's just that interesting. It's Joshua Pierce. Joshua, you're a professor at Michigan Technological University. Tell us what of, please.
Yes, thank you. It's material science and engineering. And electrical and computing engineering.
Okay, so you have a dual appointment there. So tell me a little bit about your it's much more than a flirtation, obviously, but your interest in 3D printing. How did you happen to get interested in 3D printing?
So I started out as a solar photovoltaic researcher, and I had a group of students that was working on a solar powered laptop for the developing world. And we did the designs and electronics, and everything was looking really good. And we got to the point where we wanted to prototype it and sort of have a, like the back of the laptop would actually act as the solar collector. So we needed to be able to rapid prototype it in plastic. And I finally, and this is, you know, after I became a professor, I finally had access to a rapid prototyping 3D printing machine. So we got all excited, made the designs, went to make them, and then found out that the plastic little sleeve that was going to hold the solar cells cost over $65, which made the entire project uneconomic. And then I started looking around of, you know, how can you wrap the prototype for less money? And right at about that time, a professor in Britain had open sourced the RepRap project, which stands for Self-Replicating Rapid Prototyper. So it's a 3D printer that can print itself. And I, of course, immediately fell in love. Most, like, I think pretty much any engineer that sees it, and started making that a major aspect of my research and kind of what I've done since then.
So it's like a robot that can make other robots, essentially.
Yes.
Okay.
Although you still have to have a person in between. So we don't have to worry just yet.
Good.
Yeah, it can make more than half of its own parts.
I, for one, welcome our robot overlords. Anyway, so
robots are having babies now.
Yes.
So.
Exactly.
The 3D printers, yes. Okay. So tell me what you're doing with them. I know some of your research has, you know, people always ask me, well, what are we going to use 3D printers for? What are we going to do with them? But I can see, I mean, I remember when people thought it was silly that every house would have a computer. People thought it was silly that every house would have a printer, a scanner in it.
Telephone.
So tell me what you think 3D printers could do for people in the real world.
Sure. So I think everyone will end up printing the things that are most interesting to them. So, for example, in our lab, we now print most of our own equipment, and we found that we can make something that you buy in a catalog for about 1% of the cost of what it would cost, you know, to buy it on the internet. Ooh. And so, because of that, we've been getting, you know, highly customized, you know, exactly the tools that we want to do these weird experiments that we want. And, you know, those kind of that type of equipment is always very costly. But we did a study because we figured if it was going to be make economic sense for us, what about just a normal everyday consumer? And so I had the students randomly select 20 things that they wanted. And so the deal was, if they printed it and kept all the data for me, they'd get to take home whatever it was afterwards. And so we got cell phone cases and kitchen, you know, knickknacks and things that they wanted for their stereos and all kinds of different
ashtrays and things like that. Or no ashtrays, right?
Not an ashtray. No smoking on Michigan Tech's campus. So, and you wouldn't want it. This is all printed in plastic.
Oh,
and so
okay.
what we did is we took those 20 objects, paid attention to how much plastic we used, how long it took, and the electricity that we used. And we found that essentially for an $18 investment to print those 20 things, the average consumer is going to save up to $2,000.
Wow.
And that's without, you know, counting taxes or shipping or anything, just the purchase price of using, say, Google Shopper on the internet. Hmm. And so I'm very bullish on this. I think that we are going to see 3D printers in every home. And the reason for that is they are getting remarkably better. When I first started at them, even the high-end commercial ones that were hundreds of thousands of dollars were sort of quirky. And now we build 3D printers, for example, here at Tech in a class where there's 50 students. Every student builds a printer from scratch, and those printers cost $500. And so I think it's not too long before you see printers, you know, they're already showing up in Sam's Club and Staples. They're kind of everywhere. They're all over Amazon. If someone wants to sort of get started in 3D printing, they can now. And in the near future, I think it'll just be kind of a common thing, like you have a dishwasher at home to save you time in cleaning dishes. You can have a 3D printer at home to save you time in going to the store.
I would imagine then, do you have a lot of maker folks up there that participate in all this?
Yes. We're actively recruiting makers all the time, whatever we can. And the RepRap community, the people that are working on the printers themselves, they're scattered all over the world. So it's people that are just hacking in their basements and their garages. They might be part of a university, but they might be part of a company. They're just in it because they love it. Every time they share their design on the web, all of us then can take the best ideas that come from all over the world and incorporate them in our own 3D printers. And then the only obligation we have is that if we do something that improves it, we're obligated to share it back with the rest of the world. Hmm. And so we had a very nice example of that happen here where, you know, we've been building off of 3D printers from Europe and Germany for a while now. And we came up with a simple fix where you could attach a MIG welder and use it as a print head. And so then we were able to 3D print in metal, and we've done steel and aluminum so far. And because we used open source plans in order to get to that point, we shared it with the rest of the world. And so now people are 3D printing in metal all over the world for extremely low cost. That printer costs $1,200 because it was shared in an open source capacity.
Wow.
There must be millions of designs now out, you know, in the open source community for various objects, right?
Yes. Yeah, they're growing, as best as I can tell, exponentially, and there's certainly more than a million now. Most things that you would want, somebody's at least taken a try at it, and it might not be exactly what you want, but then the kind of the fun of it is you can download it and tweak it to, you know, put your name on it or put a dragon on it or whatever you want to do, and then send it to your printer and print it out.
All right. I understand you have some guests from Central America that are coming to Michigan Tech this week, and you're going to be working on some kind of project with them. Tell us a little bit about that, if you would, please.
Yeah. So these guests are from Nicaragua, and they're volunteers with Enabling the Future, which is a group that use kind of these low-cost 3D printers to make prosthetics for children all over the world. Hmm. And so prosthetics are pretty expensive, and particularly for kids because they're growing, you know, that means getting a new one every year or so. So 3D printing actually makes a very nice, good fit for that. And so right now, if you're in the U.S. and you have, like, say you're missing a couple fingers or something, you can have someone with a 3D printer print you out a new hand, a new prosthetic hand. But in Nicaragua, they're having trouble because it's very difficult to get filament there and 3D printing supplies. And so what we're doing with Eric, one of the guests, is we're teaching him how to build our 3D printers from scratch and how to build our RecycleBots. And a RecycleBot is a device that turns waste plastic and turns it into 3D printing filament. And so the goal then is he'll go back with both the knowledge and some of our basic kits to begin sort of a manufacturing process that can scale. And we're hoping to push it across all the different universities and then eventually the high schools so that if people want access to a 3D printer, they can get access to it, and they can get 3D printing filament basically from the waste streams in their local communities.
Yeah, talk about that a little bit, if you would. I know you've sort of pioneered the process of using, I guess it's old milk jugs, and turning that into 3D printer filament.
Huh. Yes. And so now that is, again, because it was sort of released in an open source fashion, people are trying it all over the world. So there's a Plastic Bank, which is a Canadian nonprofit that's working all throughout South America to do it. There's Tech for Trade, which is a British nonprofit that's working through India and Mexico and a couple other places. And what's happening is we're all building and learning from each other's development of the tools. And so our group did HDP, which is milk jugs. Tech for Trade has got PET almost working. And so between us and them, we were now pushing on that hard. So PET is like water bottles, and it's the most common of the recyclable plastics, the thermoplastics. Once that problem is solved, that one instead of treating plastic as a waste product. And even if you recycle it, you only get a few dollars per ton. Now you could get dollars per kilogram. And that enables kind of waste pickers in the developing world a way to go to higher value and sort of lift themselves out of poverty, and at the same time providing a real valuable service to everybody. Because I can tell you, anybody with a 3D printer burns through filament pretty fast.
Let me ask you, you were talking about prosthetics, and I was wondering if it's plastic. Is plastic strong enough to be able to handle the weight of a body when you have a prosthetic?
So these are specifically hand prosthetics, and it definitely is strong enough. There are some plastics like polycarbonate and nylon that are very rugged. For example, people have made 3D printed bikes out of nylon that you can literally just get on and ride around. But for the way that we usually do things is the components that handle a large amount of stress, like for a photovoltaic racking component, we run a metal bolt through it to give it some additional support, but then everything else is 3D printed plastic around it.
All right. So tell me about, do you have a web page for your lab if people want more information, a place they can go to take a look?
Sure. So everything that we do at the university in this context is put up on the web at apropedia.org/MOST. And MOST is the Michigan Tech Open Sustainability Technology Lab. And Apropedia is sort of it's a combination of appropriate technology and Wikipedia. So it's basically the same thing as Wikipedia, only it's only looking at sort of how-tos and designs for objects that would be useful in sustainable development.
Why don't you spell that, since it's kind of a concocted name?
Sure. It's appropedia.org/MOST.
Got it.
All right. So what's the average cost of the 3D printers of the type that you use?
So if you build it from a kit yourself, if you're a maker and you're comfortable, you can get a kit for under $500. If you'd rather just get something out of a box, you can buy, for example, a Lulzbot Mini. I think that's around $1,200, and their high-end, their big TAZs, are up around $2,000. Mm. And so those, I use them as an example because it's a company that literally 3D prints the parts for their own printers to make additional printers and saves you the trouble of putting it together. You literally pull it out of the box, plug it in with a USB cord the same way you would a two-dimensional printer, and you can print. It's fairly easy.
Well, here's the silly question that I can't resist. When do we get 3D printed food?
He's back to that replicator thing again. He's waiting for that for his house.
Yes, the Star Trek replicator.
So for food?
Here's my chicken sandwich and coffee, says Captain Kirk, but it's full of troubles.
I think we're a little bit away from that now. If you just want to do a 3D printed food object, you could use a syringe pump attached to our printers and, you know, print pancakes or something like that.
Print
I don't know.
Pancakes.
I think we're a little far away from.
I think I'd let Matt try that, you know. So print pancakes, Matt.
Well, because I read something in CNET a couple of years ago about an experiment with a 3D printed pizza where you had different heads for the dough, the sauce, and the cheese, but it was not terribly successful.
I think you could get that to work, but I don't know. That's not the top of my priority list for objects to design.
No. And I know the medical community is one of the top. We talked about prosthetics, but I know dentists are among the biggest users of 3D printers, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Both hearing aids now are almost all 3D printed, and the dental community is going wild. And luckily, it looks like we're finally going to get approval, got government approval in the U.S. to start doing things like implants. And so I think we're going to see medical 3D printing take off and hopefully radically reduce the cost for all of us.
That is fascinating. And these are all like biocompatible plastics, right, that you're using. And I know industry is using metal to a certain extent. You talked about welding with a 3D printer, but even using powdered metals, right? That presents some other challenges in terms of, you have to get that stuff really hot.
Right. Yeah. So the high-end metal printers in industry cost more than $500,000, and they use powdered metal, which is highly explosive and toxic sometimes. So it's not something that you'll see in the home, but they get unbelievable prints. Like you can print everything from jet engines to hip implants. What we're doing is lower resolution. So it's on the order of a millimeter resolution, and that's either used for near net shape objects, like say for the auto industry, but you can also print useful things like say pliers with them that are 100% functional, just like you buy at the hardware store.
All right. Thanks very much, Joshua Pierce, professor at Michigan Technological University. You've heard the website. Go learn more about 3D printing. Mike, I think we're going to be taking our first break here.
We are. We'll be right back, hopefully with John Bebo calling in from the Center for Michigan and Bridge Magazine.
Hey, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Hey, it's the M Squared TechCast, and it's Matt Roush.
And Mike Brennan. And with us in studio today is an old friend, Pamela Dover, Senior Director of Business Development and Marketing for Comcast Business. Welcome, Pamela.
Thank you. I'm really glad to be here with you guys.
Lovely day. We're looking outside. Got to love this for November 2nd, right?
Yeah, 70-something degrees in November. That's pretty awesome.
Amazing.
So Pamela, tell us, you said that Comcast Business had a new product that you were really just burning to tell us about. So what is this new product?
Yeah, we're so excited. We launched this product last month, and basically it's called Comcast Business Voice Mobility. And we've had a lot of customers ask us, when are you guys going to get a mobile device or some type of mobile product? And this product will definitely fit the bill for small business customers. So basically, what Comcast Voice Mobility is a new type of phone line for small and medium-sized business with an easy-to-use mobile app. It allows these small business customers to use their business phone number, on their mobile. So they don't have to give out their mobile number or have to get two mobile phones, because some business customers, they'll have a personal mobile, then a business mobile. Well, this product will allow you not to have to do that. It has so many great features. It has about 20 features, including a move call. And the move call feature lets you transfer a call in progress from your desk phone. So you're talking to a vendor or a customer on your desk phone. You can move it to your mobile number seamlessly. So it's just pretty cool. It has, like I said, so many wonderful features. And it's a landline, but it's transformed to be a mobility line for your business.
Sort of blurs the distinction between landline and mobile line, then, huh?
Yes, it does. Well, you know what? We're Comcast. We're an innovative company, so we like to do things to just enhance the customer experience. And this one definitely will revolutionize the customer experience for business.
When did you come out with this product? How new is it?
It was launched the 1st of October of this year. Huh. It's brand new.
Brand new.
So you guys are breaking it.
All right. How about that? And so is it been well received so far?
So far, yes. We are taking a lot of orders for it. Business customers really like it. So our business account executives also act as technology consultants. So they'll go into, you know, a business prospect and kind of show them how it works, how the features work, and they love it. And they sign up right away.
Huh. So what other new products are? Let's talk a little bit about Comcast Business. I know before we went on air, I said I was a bit confused because there seems like there's multiple Comcasts dealing with multiple areas. So let's kind of break them down as to let's start with Comcast Business. And I know you're focused. You're the director for Michigan, Indiana, and part of Kentucky, if I believe.
That's right. And we call ourselves the Heartland Region. And in the Heartland Region Business Services, we have about 130 business account executives and employees.
Wow, that many.
Yes, a lot. And basically, our focus is we are responsible for powering small businesses. And through voice data, we have Wi-Fi services, of course, TV services, and our all-new enterprise solutions, which are fiber for larger customers. And with speeds of, I mean, our speeds are the fastest. And I know Matt is just jumping in here to ask me something.
Well, it's funny. I just went on speedtest.net and tested out the connection here in the studio, which happens to be Comcast cable.
Oh, right. I didn't know
and,
that.
Yeah, I
thank
noticed,
you for being a customer.
Okay. Yeah. And I noticed the ping was 27 milliseconds, which is pretty good. The download speed, 40.3 meg. The upload speed, 22 meg. Those are speeds you couldn't even, I mean, you know, the universities couldn't get those speeds not long ago. How fast, you know, I mean, what is Comcast saying about how fast this is all going to get? I mean, and sort of what's the limit here?
So, you know, it's great you asked that question because, again, we're an innovative company. So there isn't going to be a limit. We're going to continue to innovate products. We have one of the largest fiber networks in the world. And because of that, we can continue to innovate and drive new products. Mm-hmm. And we do it all the time, like on the residential side. We have Xfinity Home and the X1 platform, which is a very cool guide. It's an interactive guide. And customers are loving it. So we'll continue to innovate.
Yeah, I know people just sort of take that for granted now that they have access to, you know, tens of thousands of movies, just, oh, I feel like watching a movie, and they could just, you know, do a couple clicks on the remote and bang, there it is.
And there it is.
That's really a relatively recent service, right? Like X1 hasn't been out all that long.
No, X1 hasn't been out that long, but it's really a cool product, and our consumers are loving it. And so you got to get connected with this product.
Well, go ahead, Mike.
I'm sorry, but X1, now that's not part of Comcast Business, and that's another part of Comcast, right?
Yes, that's the residential part.
Okay.
So, yeah, because we're a major technology company and because we have that advanced fiber network, we were able to just diversify that network. So Comcast Business was born out of a need to supply to businesses, to power those businesses. And since we've been the largest contributor to the Comcast cable growth, that department.
I know numbers are proprietary, but bigger than a bread box, can you talk about how much reach you have with business customers? Are we tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands? I have no idea.
Many.
Many.
Many thousands.
Okay.
All right, so tell me a little bit about your career. How long have you been with Comcast? How did you get started there?
Sure. I've been with Comcast now for 20 years, and I started in the advertising sales department. And I was selling networks that had zero ratings at the time, and now now it's just exploded. I mean, you know, cable, you have to have cable now, and the ratings have just gone through the roof, and just so proud to see that. But Comcast is a wonderful company that gives employees the opportunity to grow, and so I grew. So I went from a sales representative to now where I am senior director of business development and marketing. And love Comcast and love the products and like talking about the great things, too, that we do in the community.
Yeah, that is one of the biggest changes I've seen in television in recent years is all of these allegedly basic cable networks coming out with these just incredible shows. I mean, the number one example, I guess, would be AMC's Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm.
But one,
you know, I have not ever watched that show. I don't zombies. I don't get the zombie thing, so I guess I'm not the target audience. Right?
No,
but that's the beauty of cable. It's something for everyone.
Right.
So I know you have some good programs that you like, but that is the beauty of cable. It's choices for the customers.
Well, and like I was saying, even networks that you don't think of as producing their own shows. One of my favorite shows of the last couple of years is on WGN out of Chicago, of all things, which now calls itself WGN America, and it's called Manhattan. And it's about
Chicago and Manhattan.
No, it's about the people who built the atomic bomb.
Oh,
it's about the Manhattan Project, and it's basically all of these morally conflicted nuclear physicist geniuses who know what they're building, but they sure as hell don't want Hitler to build it first. So, you know, I mean, it's really a good show, and it sort of taps into the current, you know, sort of homeland security paranoia. I mean, it's a show about the 1940s, but it's really a show about now. You know, I mean, but that's what the best sort of shows of that type always do.
Yes.
You know, they explore modern themes in a historical setting, and it's a terrific, you know, it's your typical cable TV show. It's a terrific ensemble cast. People come, people go, you know, and there are several characters that remain the same. I mean, it's a fantastic show.
Yes.
And I would I'd be all up in arms if I missed it. So tell me what what you're doing with competition. I know this isn't your particular bailiwick, but television, you know, with people cutting the cord, you know, with people going to services like Hulu and, you know, sort of watching television on their computer rather than on their television. What's, you know, how's Comcast adapting to that future?
So, you know, we really are adapting because, of course, we have the internet product. So basically, you know, we're able to sell on the go, you know, so people can watch their favorite programs on the go. So again, we cater to all audiences, all ages. So that's, you know, that's not an area that, you know, we're totally concerned about. We're good. Our market share is still very high.
So you're not worried about AT&T and what is it, DirecTV that have come together then?
Well, it's funny because they had to come together to offer the cable, and we're already there. So we'll continue to provide, you know, great content for our customers, and so we can continue to do all the on-demand greatness that we do, and people continue to love the product.
Great. Well, we're going to keep Pamela around here in the second segment and do a deeper dive into this. We got about 2 minutes left. So what's coming up in 2016 we can talk about that we don't, you know, obviously don't want to get you in trouble here, but what can we talk
maybe
about?
Maybe we want to a little bit.
Maybe a little bit, yeah, you know.
Well, you know what? Again, product innovations and just a lot of great community service. Comcast, too, as a whole, will be launching a customer experience campaign, and we are going to hire nearly 400 new Comcast employees over the next year. And again, all this is to improve the customer experience. So a lot of focus on customer experience, and like I said, a lot of great community programs that we do.
All right, what we're going to do when we come back out of break is she's going to give you that address for how you can apply for those jobs. I imagine they're all over the state, right?
Yes.
Okay, cool. How are we doing, Jessica? 1 minute?
1 minute.
Okay.
All right.
That was our able-bodied engineer there, Jessica. So.
All right. So we'll be back with more from Pamela Dover of Comcast Business, and then we will wrap up the show with our tech news headlines of the week. That'll be at 3:45, or in the final segment of the show for you folks listening on podcast sometime in the future. So, hi, future.
Hi, future.
How you doing?
Yes. Okay. So
this what's it like in the future?
Yeah,
tell us.
Yeah. Well. So this is Mike Brennan.
And Matt Rausch.
And you're on M Squared TechCast.
Hey, it's the M Squared TechCast, and I'm Matt Rausch.
And I'm Mike Brennan, and our guest in the studio is Pamela Dover, Senior Director of Business Development and Marketing for Comcast Business. And when we went to break, she was just talking about how there's 400 jobs that Comcast just announced.
4 million jobs.
4 million jobs. Anybody can get a job. No,
anyone who wants a job can have four.
Really.
Yeah, okay, gotcha.
So I actually saw that. I think you announced that last week, didn't you?
Yeah, yes,
okay.
We did.
So let's talk a little bit about those 4 million, 100 jobs, and where those folks can apply. So what sorts of folks are you looking for to fill those jobs?
So the bulk of the jobs will be customer service jobs, and anyone who wants to apply can go on ComcastCorporation.com and look up careers, job careers.
And it'll be segmented by states or regions or whatever?
By states, yes, because we are a major company. So, yes, by you can look up Michigan.
Michigan.
Yes.
And then when they get there, they're going to find... So, I mean, like...
They'll find other jobs.
300 jobs are customer service, according to what I read, and another 100 are sales, marketing, things like that?
There are many sales jobs, and there are also technicians. We're looking for able technicians. So, you'll see a myriad of jobs. And
okay.
You'll see some executive jobs, account executives as well, on our business side as well as our residential side.
Hey, Mike. I just went someplace else and found a bunch of Comcast jobs. There's this website, jobs.comcast.com, and then you punch in Michigan, and there are 170 job listings there alone. Now, some of them will probably have more than one opening in them, but there's communication technician, there's customer account executive supervisor, sales associates, warehouse and materials, communities account representative. And the locations are all over the place. Plymouth, Royal Oak, Lansing, Sterling Heights, Battle Creek, Muskegon, Detroit, Ann Arbor. So there's jobs all over the state.
Isn't that great news?
That's great news. 4 million jobs from Comcast. So. No unemployment in Michigan. But also, yes, I know you have some folks that go door-to-door, and boy, I'll tell you, if that's cold sales, door-to-door, I can't think of a harder way to sell, but... People like that?
They do like it.
Well,
and it's great money in it.
And it depends where you are, too, because I know when my daughter was a student at Michigan State, on the move-in weekends, you know, before school started, and she lived in a house on Kedzie Street a couple of blocks north of Grand River, and there were guys crawling all over those neighborhoods, like beating each other down, trying to get, you know, because there were two cable companies in East Lansing, and they were both trying to get to all of the students moving in, saying, hey, sign up for the coming year, you know, and that would be, I think, an easier way to do it probably than just knocking on doors in a regular residential neighborhood, but boy, they were working hard.
What makes it good is our products are good, and a lot of customers want us, or non-customers want us. So when the guys go door to door, I mean, you'll be surprised how many people hold like long conversations with them and just want to talk to them. So it's really good. And again, they're consultants, and they're able to really talk about the products and services and explain it. So some people really like that part. And they like having the door-to-door experience.
Mm-hmm.
What was something like that pay? What's the commission on something like that?
Oh, wow. The door-to-door sales teams, they can make
$50,000. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Oh, yeah. It's good money. It's good money in sales.
And if you're going to learn sales, that's probably the best way to start, because that's the hardest way to start, right? So...
Yeah, it's completely cold. So, so do you? Where is Comcast in Michigan in terms of its business service, and I guess residential? If you happen to know, I know business is your bag. Yeah, it's your bailiwick. But where does Comcast offer business services in Michigan?
So our footprint is it's the same as the residential. We cover Detroit. We cover Lansing, Grand Rapids. And we also cover this area where we are today, Royal Oak, Ferndale, you know, southeastern Michigan, a lot of Wayne County, a lot of Oakland County. So our footprint is pretty massive here in the state of Michigan.
What about outstate? Grand Rapids, Kalamazoo,
mm-hmm.
that area?
Grand Rapids is probably our largest footprint in western Michigan. We cover Muskegon. We cover Battle Creek, Jackson, those areas. And also, I didn't mention like Ann Arbor and Brighton. So we're, you know.
And you guys are based out of Plymouth. At least you're based out of Plymouth, right?
I am. That's where our Heartland Region headquarters is located.
Yeah, it's a fun place to try to find the first time you try to find
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I know. I drove around and asked a lot of people, and they go, "What? What are you looking for?" You know. So
once you find it, you'll never forget it. You'll always be able to find your way back.
That's right.
It's just the first time. It's like Google Maps got confused. You know that? How often does that happen?
And it's a large building, and we have over 600 employees just in that particular building. And in the state of Michigan, we have three large call centers.
And
so we're employing a lot of people.
Where are the call centers at?
So we have a call center in, the one in Plymouth. We also have one in on Van Dyke, and that is in Sterling Heights. And the last is in Ann Arbor, and that is one of our technical call centers.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, when you call someone, when you're having trouble with your data service through Comcast, which I haven't in a while, by the way, so thank you.
Well, good. Glad to hear that.
I always ask, where are you located? And mm-hmm. they say, well, we're outside Ann Arbor. So mm-hmm.
We're employing Michiganders.
Yes. And that is nice. And these are people that get the community and, you know, get who they're talking to. So
absolutely.
That's a neat idea for call centers. You know, corporate America, take note. Okay.
And our employees, just to talk a little bit about our community investment, you know, of course we have the call centers and we're paying taxes and, but our employees, we have over 4,200 employees in Michigan, and those employees, not only are they paying taxes, but they actually roll up their sleeves in the community and they give of their talent and time. Just like our organization, just in Michigan, we have given over $7.5 million last year to nonprofit organizations, and that's pretty substantial.
What types of organizations are you investing in? And if there's a nonprofit out there that's interested, how would they go about contacting you? Besides, Matt is raising
his hand.
He's a nonprofit, but that's by choice.
I work for one now. Yes,
oh,
right,
yes, you do.
Okay.
You do.
Yep.
So we actually, any nonprofit that is dedicated to literacy – technology.
Ooh. Engineering Society of Detroit, man.
There you go, Matt.
we'll talk, believe me.
Absolutely. Right. And a lot of human, human source, type of organizations. We do a lot with, like, the Detroit Rescue Mission, Focus Hope, Big Brothers, Big Sisters. So, self-development health groups, mm-hmm. and groups that helps children.
And with the holidays coming up, are you doing anything special in that area? Because that's a real time of need, in particular, and the cold weather coming and all that.
Yes, we actually have a big campaign drive right now going on for the United Way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty substantial. We give a lot of money to the United Way, and we have employee resource groups too that also get out in the community. And I know that there's a lot planned now for Gleaners and the Detroit Rescue Mission. And the organization, the division that I am over, that I work for, I'm sorry, I'm not going to take my boss's job.
No. But watch out. She's coming up. So
we also give to the community. We're members of over 100 chambers and associations here in Michigan. So not only do we just pay dues, but we also are engaged. We give events with them. We sponsor various outings that they have and meetings and things like that. Also, we host 6 to 8 webinars per year that our business customers can take advantage of. These great webinars to help them help their business succeed, because we want their business to succeed and we want more and more businesses to succeed. So we also have hundreds of articles that small businesses can take advantage of. They're industry related and also that can help.
So what would the webinars topics be?
So anywhere from talking about the cloud, storage, technology checkups, what they need to do and have for their businesses, capital, access to capital, and just different business insights. And so it's really good, really good for the small businesses. We're dedicated to helping them be successful.
Do you have one coming up we can talk about?
You know what? I don't know right now, but I know we will. But what I do have coming up in the month of December, we're going to host a free workshop in Detroit. We're still working on the location, and it's for small businesses. We're bringing in a national industry analyst to talk about strategic business insights and getting ready for the new year. So we also hold free workshops throughout the year. And so I would love for any of your audience, if they'd like to attend, they could either email me at Pamela_Dover@cable.comcast.com, and we could put them on our mailing list so they can take advantage of some of the workshops and also the webinars and other things that we have that we do for small businesses.
Yeah, make sure Michelle Gilbert gets me that information, and we'll publish it for you too.
Oh,
so
that'll be great.
Yeah, Matt and I do a joint newsletter, couple joint newsletters, so reaching our respective audiences. Mm-hmm. So go ahead. You were all excited when she said nonprofits and money. I saw you perk up over there.
I love it.
Well, among my missions at the Engineering Society of Detroit, somebody ring the bell here for the shameless plug.
Okay. We'll hit that right in front of you. That's our shameless plug bell.
Yeah.
All right. There you go.
Yeah. Among my duties at the Engineering Society is trying to find new sources of grant funding for the society. So I really do want to talk to you about that. We do a lot of neat stuff for middle school kids with our Future City program, where they design a city of the future, complete with infrastructure. And then we have a program for high school kids called Engineering Smart Michigan, where they design an energy efficient home.
And then you got your university chapters.
Yeah, we have student chapters at Michigan engineering programs and college and university engineering programs.
Well, that sounds great. Well, Comcast have a large foundation called the Comcast Foundation. So we would invite you to submit a grant. And again, you can go on Comcast Corporation.com and look for Comcast Foundation. And there's information there. Or again, you can email me, send me an email. Mm-hmm. But the Comcast Foundation, we through that provide many, many grants. And we also have a national project called the Comcast Cares Day.
Okay.
And that's a national day of caring where thousands of Comcasters are out helping nonprofits. And it's beautiful to see. So, again, it's a national program. And you mentioned scholarships. We also have a program called Leaders and Achievers where we give high school seniors scholarships. So we do a lot, you know, in the community.
Well, we're going to have to leave it at that with Pamela Dover, Senior Director of Business Development and Marketing for Comcast Business in the Heartland region. Yeah.
Yes, Heartland.
which is part Michigan, Indiana, parts of Kentucky. We're done with this segment. We'll be back with some news. This is Mike Brennan.
And it's Matt Rausch.
And you're listening to M Squared TechCast.
Hey, it's the M Squared TechCast, and this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan, and we're still with Pamela Dover. She's got so much information here, like one of those data dump things. And so we got a couple more items to talk about. You were saying there's some contests for entrepreneurs, and we didn't get to that in the last segment, so talk about that.
Yeah, we Comcast has committed to, again, the local business community. And we have contests called Innovations for Entrepreneurs. And entrepreneurs are to write essays about how they would use technology to improve their business. So we give away $10,000 scholarships here locally, and then if they're selected as a finalist, they can win up to $30,000 plus the $10,000. So last year we did have a winner from Michigan that won actually $30,000, which was really, really cool. But we have
some kind of construction something
yes.
or other, because I know I interviewed the guy, but I can't remember the details anymore.
Yeah, so anyway, any Michigan business can apply just by writing an essay. So they can win. So we always have two local winners that will win $10,000 each. And then the national winner will win $20,000. So it's actually $30,000 as a cash prize that they can get.
But you go to Philly, right?
They get to go to Philly. They get to also meet with some business consultants. And it's a really cool experience for the winners. So the application process will start in February. Mm-hmm. So we're really excited about that. So again, if businesses are interested, they can go on business.comcast.com. com/i4e to get more information. But anyway, so that's one of the things that Comcast Business is rolling out. And I also just wanted to just mention Comcast Business offers the best in internet service for businesses of any size. Also, we have a portfolio, a large portfolio of voice products and Wi-Fi and TV service, and then enterprise for large customers, fiber solutions up to 10 gigs. So we have great products. We're an innovative company that is a technology giant, but we do give back to the community. So that's why it was important to mention the community work that we give as well.
All right. Anything else?
That's it for now.
Got that covered for now. We'll have her back with an update.
Thank you.
We'll get you back in February for sure. You can talk about the contest and everything.
Okay.
And maybe we could bring on past winner.
And bring in the winner. Yeah, absolutely.
No, that would be awesome.
All right. Well, Matt, let's do a few headlines here. I know we got all these people really waiting for those headlines.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, there are fairly dozens of people waiting for these
maybe
things.
Hundreds.
Maybe hundreds.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll get there. And thousands eventually, and then world domination.
That's it.
I wanted to talk first about some research that I found out about at Western Michigan University that was not part of the tech tour. I don't know if you've ever heard about rare earth elements.
Yeah.
They are
Chinese
crucial.
Have a lot of those.
Yeah,
right?
they are crucial for the production of computer chips and solar panels. And there is a lot of concern because they're hard to get, very expensive, and a lot of them are controlled by China, and they might not always be the world's friendliest nation toward us.
No.
So Western Michigan University is part of an international team of scientists and engineers that have shown they could take new materials made from more abundant elements, plain old stuff, and tune it to take the part of rare earth elements in solar panels. I don't claim to understand the chemistry involved, but they've zeroed in on a compound called zinc tin nitride and discovered a tuning process that could make it possible replacement for currently used rare earth materials. Pretty interesting stuff. Zinc and tin are as common as dirt, quite literally.
Actually, I did pick up that story from you and put it in the Friday newsletter. So the 4,000 or so folks that get the newsletter, many of them probably saw that, but more detail is a good thing. Speaking of details, in Current Motor Company, a privately held electric motorcycle and solar charging maker, won the second annual Michigan Mobi Prize competition last Thursday, which is $5,000, some mentorship, networking opportunities. This is a company out of Ann Arbor, and they, like I say, make electric motorcycles, and that's kind of where vehicles are headed, just at different paces. And you know, we've got the hybrids like the Chevy Volt and things like that out there. You know, give it another 5 or 10 years, and I think most vehicles on the road will be either hybrid or all electric.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I've got something here. I don't know if you know. I'm sure you know John Silvani, Mike. He is a longtime Michigan software expert guy, entrepreneur. His company, Gravity Software in Southfield, has announced special pricing of its Gravity 2015 software for nonprofit organizations. It's accounting software. It's interesting stuff. It's built in the cloud on the Microsoft Dynamics CRM platform, and he's offering it to nonprofits for $15 per user per month, which is a pretty good deal for nonprofits. It's basically a one-screen financial business system that connects to front office sales, service, and marketing. So it's sort of an ERP system for nonprofits that's really inexpensive. I mean, $15 per user per month is really cheap.
Yeah, that is very inexpensive. We have another winner out there. If you want to be a winner out there, we have a chance to build this mobile app. There's a number of groups getting together on December 3rd, Small Business Development Center of Michigan, the Mobile Technology Association of Michigan, Automation Alley, and a couple others are having some workshop they're calling How to Build a Successful Mobile App Boot Camp. And they're going to get you together at Automation Alley on December 3rd in the morning. And then when you come out of the sausage machine on the end, I don't know whether you're going to have an app in hand, but you're going to learn a lot more about how you can build a mobile app. And this is not really aimed at programmers. They don't know how to do that. It's for the rest of us that think we need a mobile app for our businesses. They're going to try to teach you how to do that. And like I said, you can find those details at mitechnews.com. It's something to check out. I mean, certainly I think we could use a mobile app, couldn't we?
I think you're right.
Yeah, head over there and check that out.
Well, I got another company here. We at TechCentury.com, my news website. We don't just cover high tech. We also cover manufacturing in the auto industry, which is obviously increasingly high tech. There's a company based in Rockford called Byrne Electrical Specialists that is expanding in a new plant in Lakeview along the shoreline in Lake Michigan. It is going to be a $250,000 investment by Byrne, a $500,000 investment by the landlord. It'll create 32 jobs. Byrne Electrical does automotive electrical specialties. It's one of those neat little manufacturers that has grown up here in Michigan, founded by Norman and Roseberry Byrne back in 1971 in the basement of their home in Ada. So it's a neat little success story.
Lots of stuff got started in Ada. There's a little company there called Amway.
Did that start in a basement too? I think it did.
A garage, I think.
Oh, okay.
Two guys,
yeah.
A garage. You know, they weren't Wozniak and Jobs, but Van Andel and DeVos have done kind of okay for themselves, build an $11 billion private company now.
Yep, absolutely.
So I guess I could take that, right? I know Pamela would take that, right?
Pamela would take that.
Absolutely. Okay, another contest out there. The Macomb OU Incubator had a contest for $20,000 cash and prizes in their Macomb Pitch Competition for Small Business. And a little company called Flipsy. I'm pronouncing that right.
Yeah, I've heard of them. Yep.
Yeah, makers of a bottle that flips inside out, eliminating any hard-to-reach surfaces, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so I looked at it because when I first looked at the name, I thought, what? So then I looked at the actual, what it looks like, and if you're, you know, trying to clean out that baby bottle or something or other, make sure it's in good shape, then Flipsy is the way to go, and they won themselves some money. They're going to get some coaching. That's a good thing, right? So we want to point out when we have successful companies here in Michigan.
And it's not just your imagination. The economy actually is doing better. The Michigan Economic Activity Index of Comerica Bank grew in August. It's now up to 127.4. Translated, that means that the Michigan economy is producing about 27% more stuff than it did back in the base year of 2008. Obviously, a lot of this is driven by the auto industry. There's pretty good news on the labor relations front. The unions are being pretty reasonable in their demands in the labor talks right now. It's interesting. The only negative is actually a kind of a good thing. The U.S. dollar has gained a substantial amount of strength against the euro, which makes U.S. exports more expensive. That's the bad part of it. And it increases competition with foreign imports in U.S. markets. But I guess a strong dollar is never a bad thing, or sometimes not a bad thing. Or
it depends on what you're doing.
Yeah.
I mean, balance of trades, we're going to get all that heavy stuff. But, I mean, the euro, I think, is down to $1.10, $1.12.
$1.11 last
yeah,
I heard.
Somewhere
yeah, right.
in that ballpark. My daughter's studying in Paris right now, so when I send her money, that means she gets more euros, and so she's happy.
Right.
Daughters, well, we won't go into that. Anyway, for our friends over in West Michigan, early stage venture capital company called Start Garden, which Rick DeVos.
Yeah, that's the third generation
the
DeVos.
The third generation
right?
yep. started 4 or 5 years ago, I guess. And another company over there called Emerge West Michigan are looking at merging. And what they're trying to do is have a one-stop place for West Michigan entrepreneurs to be able to come. Excuse me. And I think the talks are pretty preliminary yet, but hopefully they'll come together, and we'll keep you updated on that as they move forward.
And Rick DeVos is also the fellow behind Art Prize, I believe.
Art Prize,
right?
That's his baby, yes.
Yeah, I actually stumbled on that the first year they had it. I was over there visiting a relative in a hospital in Grand Rapids, and I was like, what in the heck is all this art all over the place, and why are all these people downtown taking the parking spot that I want? So, you know, it was a neat problem to have, though.
It's one of those rare times when Grand Rapids sidewalks are like the sidewalks of New York.
Yes.
So where you're elbowing your way through there, and especially on the weekends, and they draw like 300,000-400,000 people over the space of 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And so everyone over there is quite excited about it. All the merchants and restaurants are real busy. Lots of, in fact, when I did my book with Richard Steen and that Cyber Stiletto, it was the only literary prize they allowed in. So I had books there and tried to sell books and stuff. So, I mean, it's pretty wide open. Whatever you think is art, within reason, they'll take a look at, and what the heck, you know?
Well, and I've always liked the people's choice aspect of it, too. There's an official juried prize for Art Prize by art experts, but there's also just something that appeals to the greatest mass number of people, which is part of what that competition is all about, right? It's like art for the masses, kind
of. Yeah, it really is. You know, and I guess I got panned. Some New York art critic went out there for this year and panned it. But it's not New York art. It's Midwest art, and it's very participatory, as you might say.
And it's supposed to be more fun, and it sort of fits in with the modern ethic toward crowdsourcing, I think.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, it's the way everything is moving, so... We have 1 minute left on the show.
All right. Well, then it's time to thank our guests. I want to thank very much Pamela Dover. Pamela, give me your title again, please, from Comcast.
Sure. Senior Director of Business Development and Marketing for Comcast.
Okay. Comcast Business's Pamela Dover, thank you so much for being here with us today. And thanks for kicking off the show. It was Joshua Pierce with Michigan Technological University way up in Houghton, where it's also a really nice day. And he was talking about 3D printing, and he is their resident expert. Not that he ever really intended to be. It's just one of those career paths that sort
that
of grabs
happens,
you.
Huh? You, yeah. You fall into something that you weren't really planning, but that's what life's all about.
Indeed.
All right. Well, it's been fun. We'll be back next week, whether you like it or not. This is Mike Brennan.
And it's Matt Rausch.
And you've been listening to M Squared TechCast.
See you next week.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at podcastdetroit.com.
This is a previously recorded episode.